Hi everyone, welcome to the pilot episode. We have a new concept for a podcast which I'm calling Wrestling with Hindsight. I've been a professional wrestling fan for pretty much as long as I can remember. And I know that there's a lot of wrestling podcasts out there, particularly a lot of retro wrestling recap podcasts, but the difference between those and this one? This one's mine. It's my spin on it, and my plan is to look at professional wrestling events, whether they be events I've attended, or various pay-per-view events, or episodes of weekly TV shows for professional wrestling federations, and to look back on them, recap them, and, if possible, talk about, you know, what I remember about them when I was there watching them and experiencing it for the first time, and also, when possible, bringing up how the event affected the professional wrestling industry as a whole. So I thought for this first episode, it would be appropriate to start the, hopefully, run of this podcast with the first episode of WWF Monday Night Raw. Now, up until this point, wrestling was more or less syndicated on weekends. Quite often Saturday morning. That's when I remember watching it. But in 1993... The World Wrestling Federation chairman Vince McMahon, and they'd had a programming on Monday night in the past, but it was usually a pre-recorded show in the form of primetime wrestling, usually either a panel show, which would consist of various members of the World Wrestling Federation. For a while, the hosts were Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby Heenan. After a while, there was a four-person panel format, often consisting of Vince McMahon and Bobby Heenan as regular members. And for a while, it switched to a show where they had a live in-studio audience, where they would still show matches, but also would have skits on occasion in between. It was strange. I don't remember seeing a lot of it, but from what I have seen, the less said about that era, the better. So 1993 comes around, and Vince McMahon decides, you know what? Let's have live professional wrestling on Monday nights for an hour a week. And that is where Monday Night Raw came into being. So, without any further ado, Episode 1 of WWF Monday Night Raw. The episode takes place January 11th, 1993, and very fittingly, I watched this and took notes on it the day before the 23rd anniversary of the air dates. Funny coincidence. So the show begins with a shot of the Empire State Building and Sean Mooney standing outside the Manhattan Center. Mooney begins to hype up the event, and Bobby the Brain Heenan tries to push his way past him into the building. Mooney tells Heenan that he's been placed on commentary, and Heenan asks, "By who?" "Why, Rob Bartlett," Mooney replies. Heenan doesn't care about Rob Bartlett, and still tries to make his way inside. Heenan says, "They can't keep me out, I'll buy a ticket," but Mooney says there are no tickets left, the event is sold out. Heenan then asks Mooney to direct him to the press gate, and the two argue as we cut to the title sequence. It's a fairly short montage of wrestlers in the ring, doing moves, very visually stylized. And it's not that long either. It's probably even less than 30 seconds long. If you go to YouTube and type in WWF Monday Night Raw Intro 1 or First Intro, you'll see what I mean. We get our first live shot of the crowd in the Manhattan Center, and it is indeed packed. Vince McMahon welcomes us to Monday Night Raw and introduces the rest of the commentary team, Macho Man Randy Savage and Rob Bartlett. For those who may not know, Rob Bartlett is an actor and comedian who is well known at the time for his appearances doing impressions and characters on the Don Imus radio show. My guess is that this was the WWF's idea to give the show some more New York appeal, since for any of the early run of the show, episodes took place at the Manhattan Center. Fun fact, I saw Bartlett in the role of Mr. Mushnick when I saw the Broadway production of Little Shop of Horrors many years ago. That's really all I have to say about that. Vince McMahon runs down the card, which will include the Steiner Brothers in action, as well as an interview with Razor Ramon. Rob Bartlett says he's looking forward to Coco Beware versus Yokozuna. You know, who got the guy who wears the diaper with the thing between Dead Man's Land and No Man's Land? You mean Yokozuna, who has the gimmick of being a sumo wrestler, and as such wears a variation of the traditional sumo mawashi? This would be the beginning of the trend of the WWF bringing people into their broadcast team from outside of the world of wrestling, and the results being mixed at best and deplorable at worst. I'm looking at you, Art Donovan. Randy Savage gets the conversation back on track and tells us we'll also see Damien Demento versus The Undertaker tonight, and Vince sends it to the ring. So our opening contest, the first broadcast match in Monday Night Raw history, is Coco Beware versus Yokozuna. As Coco makes his entrance, Rob Bartlett speaks up saying, "You know, I often wonder what happened to Gary Coleman, Vince." Alright, not even 3 minutes into the show, and an incredibly racist remark. Way to go, guys. Vince McMahon doesn't help matters at all by laughing and replying, "He grew up!" Wow. Yokozuna makes his entrance, and Randy Savage refers to him as the world's biggest egg roll. Holy crap, the match hasn't even started yet, and two racist jokes already? I know it was a different time, early 90s, blah blah blah, but still. Anyway, at this moment in time, Yokozuna is billed as weighing 505 pounds and is currently undefeated in the World Wrestling Federation. Randy Savage adds that he's also never been knocked off his feet. Rob Bartlett says that if Yokozuna spent more time at the sushi bar and should spend less time at the salad bar, and doubts that Yokozuna has even seen his feet in a while. 3.5 minutes in, and I'm beginning to regret this. Mostly because of the presence of Rob Bartlett. Yokozuna removes his robe, and Rob Bartlett comments that Yokozuna has his own no-fly zone, and I think Randy Savage starts to pun off of that, saying that there are no zippers on Yokozuna's clothes. Don't help him, Randy. "That is one big buttered oriental," Vince says Bartlett, and Vince awkwardly replies, "In a manner of speaking, yes." Bartlett follows us up by saying he's got an ass like an amphitheater, and I remember being shocked. So, a little cultural context for you. I was 9 years old when this aired, and professional wrestling was still a very over-the-top, kid-friendly medium at this point. And the fact that I just heard someone say a bad word on a wrestling show, it blew my tiny little mind. It's at this point the commentary team reminds us that Raw is uncooked. Yes, that was the tagline they were going with for the show. And it's not the last time you'll hear that tonight. Trust me. The match finally begins. Randy Savage puts over Coco Beware as a real tough guy, but notes that Coco doesn't have Frankie with him and wonders if that'll be a factor. Frankie, of course, being Coco Beware's pet macaw, which would often stand on a perch on the floor near the ring. Because heaven knows the immense psychological and technical advantages there are by having tropical birds in your corner. Vince insinuates that maybe Yokozuna found Frankie before the match and made a little snack out of him, and Bartlett asks if there's any regulations that state that Yokozuna should be wearing a bra. Coco charges Yokozuna but is shoved aside effortlessly. In response to this, Rob Bartlett says, "What you talking about, Coco?" If there's any consolation to offer, Bartlett was let go in April, and nothing of value was lost. Vince McMahon says that Yokozuna will be entering the Royal Rumble, a big 30-man battle royal, later in the month, and mentions that Randy Savage will be in the match as well. Savage says that he thinks once Yokozuna is in the ring, it might be difficult getting the 29 other guys in there. Well, maybe. I mean, he does have a point, but since the match doesn't start with all 30 participants in the ring, I don't think that will be an issue. Coco tries to lock up with Yokozuna again, only to be shoved aside once more. Coco tries for a shoulder tackle on two different attempts, but just bounces ineffectively off of Yokozuna's massive torso. Vince asks Savage what Coco should do since he can't really try to match Yokozuna with power, and Savage says that it's too late to leave the ring, the building, the state, and the country because everyone is watching. So basically, the strategy would be run. Okay. Solid logic. I can get behind that. Rob Bartlett says it's like trying to fight a battleship with a slingshot. Okay, 1 point for Bartlett for a good line. That won't happen often, though, trust me. Coco manages to stagger Yokozuna a bit with two dropkicks. He tries for a third, but Yokozuna steps aside and tosses Coco into the rope, sending him crashing to the mat, which Yokozuna follows up with a massive leg drop. Rob Bartlett tells us there's no Japanese word for leftovers as Yokozuna picks Coco Beware off the mat and shoves him into the corner. Yokozuna then moves to the opposite corner and charges into Coco Beware, back first, stunning his opponent. Yokozuna shoves Coco down to the mat and climbs to the second rope to prepare for his finishing move, the Banzai Drop. Basically, Yokozuna jumps down from the second rope and lands butt first on his opponent's chest. Simple and effective. Yokozuna hits the Banzai Drop, gets the 3 count and the victory, as Rob Bartlett says that record players in Guam just skip from the impact. We now get an ad for the upcoming Royal Rumble pay-per-view event that talks about the eponymous 30-man match itself and the WWF World Title match between Bret the Hitman Hart and Razor Ramon. Really, not much more to say here. Back from break, and we see Vince, Savage, and Bartlett at the commentary table at ringside. We see a blonde ring girl, like you'd see at a boxing match, walking around the ring, carrying a placard that has the Monday Night Raw logo on it. She looks like she'd be anywhere else than here. Vince McMahon says that even though Bobby the Brain Heenan is on the outside tonight, they have a video he sent in where he talks about Narcissus, and Vince throws to the video. We cut to Bobby Heenan standing in front of a silver curtain, and he starts the promo by calling out Mr. Perfect, saying that he's heard that Perfect has been asking the other wrestlers what they know about Narcissus. Specifically, if Narcissus is more perfect than he is. Heenan says that comparing Narcissus to Mr. Perfect would be like comparing ice cream to horse manure. Narcissus is so physically perfect that Michelangelo couldn't accurately capture all the nuances in either painted or marble sculpture form. Narcissus' body is so perfect, you would think he was from another galaxy. In retrospect, I'm very surprised Vince McMahon didn't run with this sentence and make Lex Luger, who eventually debuts as the Narcissist, an alien character. Bobby Heenan closes the promo by saying that when he unveils Narcissus at the Royal Rumble, everyone will think he's from another world. I could listen to Heenan cut promos all day. That man could do no wrong as a heel manager. Next match is the Steiner Brothers versus the Executioners. We're back at ringside, and Rob Bartlett snarks that the word brain is used very loosely when talking about Bobby Heenan. Screw you, pal. Rob Bartlett asks Savage which one of the Steiner Brothers is wearing the collegiate headgear like you would see in a collegiate wrestling match, Rick or Scott. Savage replies, the one in the middle, and Vince finds this hilarious. To Savage's credit, he does apologize and clarify that Rick is the one wearing the headgear. Scott Steiner starts off the match with, I suppose we'll call him Executioner Payne, since that word is seen on the leg of his pants. His partner being Executioner Agony. The commentary team doesn't really pay much attention to the match, instead focusing on a clown who's walking around the crowd in the background. Scott hits a nice tilt-a-whirl slam on Executioner Payne, which Vince calls, what a maneuver, as he's wont to do during this era. Scott tags in Rick while we get a close-up of the clown, and Bartlett asks, who is that? Is that Dork? And Vince replies, yes, Dork the Clown. And asks what kind of name Dork is for a clown. Randy Savage corrects them that it is Doink the Clown, and Rob and Vince seem to think that Dork is a more apt name. Back in the ring, Rick beats the crap out of Executioner Payne with a massive clothesline, then hoists Payne up onto his shoulders and charges into the corner, slamming the poor masked bastard into the turnbuckles. Executioner Payne rolls out of the ring, and his partner, Executioner Agony, comes to his side to try and talk strategy. Scott sees the opportunity to bash their heads together using the classic double noggin knocker move. Scott then rolls Executioner Agony into the ring, who technically is not the legal man, but they're masked jobbers in the early 90s, so who cares? Rick hits Executioner Agony with a huge power slam and then tags in Scott. Vince says that Mitch Farad, I think that was the name of the Buffalo Bills, is heading to the WWF. Saying that the NFL will be just a stepping stone to get there. I don't recall anything ever coming of that, so another classic 90s non-issue. Scott hits Executioner Agony with a variation of a belly-to-belly suplex. Scott tosses Agony into the corner, who tags in his partner, and Executioner Payne comes in and was met with a series of punches and forearm strikes from Scott Steiner, culminating in a double underhook powerbomb. Scott then hoists Executioner Payne onto his shoulders, and Rick climbs to the top rope, jumping off and nailing Executioner Payne with a bulldog headlock on the way down. Scott goes for the pin, and Rick intercepts Executioner Agony to prevent interference, and the Steiner brothers get the 3 count and the win. They show another camera angle of the finish from another angle, and then Vince throws to Sean Mooney, saying that there's some sort of commotion outside. So we're now back outside with Sean Mooney. He tells us that security has detained a woman outside. The woman is screaming, saying that Rob Bartlett is her nephew, and she's supposed to have a pass that he left behind for her to get inside, and Sean Mooney says that he's sure they can straighten things out until he knows that the woman's hair is a little loose on her own head. Turns out it's Bobby Heenan in drag trying to get inside the building. Heenan continues to protest and that he's got to get inside and starts offering Mooney pieces of his drag costume and even $50 to try and get in as we go to commercial and the title card telling us that a special interview with Razor Ramon is next. Back from break and we have Vince McMahon in the ring with Razor Ramon. Vince says that Razor has a golden opportunity at the Royal Rumble when he will face Bret Hart for the WWF title and asks if he's ready. Razor replies that he was born ready, and using the phrase golden opportunity sounds apt for Razor Ramon as the camera zooms in on the numerous gold chains he wears around his neck. Vince says that that's all well and good, but it took Bret Hart 8.5 years to get where he is today, and Razor is a bit of a Johnny-come-lately, if you'll pardon the expression. I'm fairly certain Vince didn't even use the expression correctly, but whatever. Razor says good for Bret that it took him 8.5 years to get to his place as the top guy in the WWF, but Razor made it to number one contender status in 8.5 months. Vince asks Razor that if he's such a good competitor, why did he blindside and attack Owen Hart? And we see footage of the incident as Razor attacks Owen while he was doing an interview on WWF Mania over the weekend. Razor says that he likes to have fun, and squashing Owen, like a cockroach, was really fun, especially because Bret can't do anything about it. Vince starts to wrap things up, but Razor grabs the mic, continuing to say that something else Bret can't do about is Razor taking his gold at the Royal Rumble. The interview ends, and Macho Man plugs the upcoming Headlock on Hunger event at Madison Square Garden and runs down some matches on the card, followed by a couple seconds of awkward silence. Rob Bartlett speaks up saying that they're going to hear up before Bartlett has even finished speaking his sentence. Tatanka basically thanks all those who have partnered with the WWF to help the less fortunate and says, let's get a hold on Headlock for Hunger. Could have come up with a more eloquent go-home line, I think. Next match, Shawn Michaels versus Max Moon in the match for the Intercontinental title. Max Moon is making his way to the ring, his gimmick being he's, well, some sort of outer space, possibly robotic being. He raises his right arm and shoots a fireball into the air. He does it the second time, but nothing happens. As he lowers his arm, the mechanism goes off and then hits a cameraman with the fireball. The cameraman falls to the side, we hear someone scream in the background, and a bunch of people in the crowd stand up suddenly, likely out of concern. Max Moon doesn't give a shit as he then continues with his entrance, firing streamers out of his left arm and then enters the ring. The camera was in the watch at this point, obviously trying to make it not so obvious, but I'll say this much. I certainly didn't know that the network first launched about a year and a half ago. Actually, probably closer to 2 years ago, to be perfectly accurate about it. But I definitely noticed it this go-around. Rob Bartlett says that Max Moon's outfit is the kind you could wear in the subway in New York and nobody would take a second look. I think that's an apt statement since he looks like the mostly aqua-colored cousin of Cyrax and Sektor from the Mortal Kombat games. Google Max Moon and you'll see what I mean. Savage says that Moon looks like Bat Masterson to him and calls Vince McMahon a riverboat gambler? The hell? I don't understand what he meant by either of those. Anyway, Shawn Michaels makes his entrance, and this was back when he was still using the version of his entrance song Sexy Boy with sensational Sherry Martel on vocals. Gotta say, I like that one better than the version where he sings it himself. That one just seems kind of odd to me. The bell rings and we're underway. To quotel, Rob Bartlett says, coming soon, the WWF version of the Amy Fisher story, Pin Me, starring sensational Sherry as Amy Fisher, Vince McMahon as Joey Buttafuoco, and Bobby Heenan as Mary Jo. Dated references for everybody. There's a series of reversals between Moon and Michaels, which end with Moon hitting Michaels with two arm drag takeovers and a body slam that sends Michaels retreating to the corner to recuperate. We get the uncooked, uncut, and uncensored tagline again as Michaels and Moon lock up. Michaels hits Max Moon with a knee to the gut and whips him to the ropes. This ultimately works against Michaels as Moon gets the momentum to go his way and slams Michaels face first to the mat and immediately follows it up with a hammerlock. Rob Bartlett tells the audience to stay tuned for Mayor David Dinkins versus Cardinal O'Connor, with Vince laughing at this and saying, time permitting, of course. Okay. Max Moon rolls Shawn Michaels over into a pinning position, but only gets a two count, and Vince McMahon tells us we have to go to a commercial. Back from break, and Shawn Michaels is now on the offensive as he has Max Moon backed into a corner. Michaels whips Moon across the ring and tries to follow up with a shoulder block, but Moon moves, sending Michaels crashing into the corner. Bartlett claims that during the break, Shawn Michaels pulled a knife and Vince McMahon admonishes Rob, telling him that it's not that Rob, but they are uncooked, uncut, and uncensored. Yeah, that tagline's never gonna get old. Michaels whips Max Moon into the corner and Moon tries to counter by jumping up and over Michaels. However, Michaels counters by catching Moon on his shoulder and dropping him throat first on the ropes. Michaels takes control as Vince tells us that Shawn Michaels is scheduled to defend the Intercontinental title at the Royal Rumble against his former friend and tag team partner, Marty Jannetty, and that Sensational Sherry will be at ringside, but they don't know whose corner she'll be in. Vince goes on to say that there's been a lot of talk about pardons lately, but WWF president Jack Tunney has not been able to successfully pardon Mike Tyson. But they understand that Mr. Tyson has a monitor and is watching live, and Rob Bartlett begins to do a very painfully unfunny impression of Mike Tyson as the commentators proceed to ignore the match in the ring so Bartlett can do this bit. Vince pulls himself away from the hilarity of it all for a moment as Max Moon gets a two count on Shawn Michaels, and then Mike Tyson asks if that's Oprah as the screen shows a close-up of Doink walking around ringside for some reason. Vince asks Mike if he has any New Year's resolutions, and Tyson says not to miss the Royal Rumble, the big tag match of the princesses Fergie and Diana versus the Prince brothers Chuck and Andy. Someone please cut him off. Vince says that's not at this year's Royal Rumble, that'll be next year. Stop encouraging him, please. Wrestle, once again ignored for lame attempts at comedy. Max Moon gets a small package, 1-2-0. Shawn Michaels whips Max Moon to the ropes and hits him with a back elbow, 1-2-0. Michaels tries for a dropkick but misses. Max Moon grabs Michaels' legs and slingshots him over the top rope to the outside. Max Moon follows this up by diving onto Michaels from the ring apron. Both men back in the ring now, and Michaels tries to get Moon to back off, but with no such luck. Michaels is backed into a corner, and Moon hits him with an uppercut. Whipped to the side, and Moon follows this up with a spinning kick on Shawn Michaels. Michaels is hoisted up on Max Moon's shoulder and is hit with what I can only describe as a reverse fall-away slam. 1-2-0. Moon slams Michaels to the mat and tries for a front somersault, but misses. Moon gets back up, and Michaels hits him with a savate kick many years before it would become his primary finisher. Michaels attempts a teardrop suplex. Moon blocks it. Moon attempts a clothesline. Michaels ducks. Teardrop suplex. Yes. 1-2-3. Michaels over and still your Intercontinental Champion. We get a commercial for WWF Mania, and then the title card saying, still to come, Damien Demento versus The Undertaker. Back from break, and we get the Royal Rumble report, hosted by Mean Gene Okerlund, and I miss the old Royal Rumble theme music. Mean Gene tells us it's official now, Shawn Michaels versus Marty Jannetty for the Intercontinental title with Sensational Sherry at ringside. Shawn cuts a promo telling Marty Jannetty that he's undeserving of a title shot, but since he's Mr. Cool, he'll give Jannetty a shot anyway. As far as Sherry is concerned, he hasn't had a chance to talk to her, but Shawn is sure that, like any woman, she'll be in his corner. We now get Marty Jannetty cutting a promo saying that he's ready to call the Royal Rumble Marty Jannetty Day, because that'll be the day he gets everything he's ever wanted. He's going to win the Intercontinental title, and he's going to end the career of Shawn Michaels. He finishes by saying that while Michaels is acting so sure that Sherry will be in his corner, maybe Shawn doesn't know Sherry as well as he thinks. Mean Gene lists some of the names signed for the Royal Rumble match this year. The winner of the 1992 Royal Rumble, Ric Flair. Native American Tatanka. Irwin R. Scheister, a.k.a. IRS. Bob Backlund. Jerry the King Lawler. And Mr. Perfect, we get a promo from, basically saying that he's happy that it's almost time for the Royal Rumble because it doesn't matter what attributes everyone else has, they aren't perfect like him. This will explain why Mr. Perfect has won every single Royal Rumble match he was ever in. Oh, wait, I'm sorry, he never won a Royal Rumble match, my mistake. Mean Gene lists off some more names. Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase. Crush. The model, Rick Martel. And Yokozuna. Mr. Fuji cuts a promo on behalf of Yokozuna, saying no one in the match will be able to move or lift his man, and he'll be victorious. More names abound. Macho Man, Randy Savage. Papa Shango. Earthquake. The Berserker. The Undertaker. From Puerto Rico, Carlos Colon. Japanese legend, The Great Tenryu. El Matador, Tito Santana. Typhoon. Samu and Fatu of the Head Shrinkers, and Hacksaw Jim Duggan, who cuts a promo saying that he won't guarantee he's going to win, but he will guarantee to give 110%. Mean Gene tells us that the winner of the Royal Rumble will go on to face the WWF Champion at WrestleMania, a trend that continues to this day. Speaking of the WWF title, Mean Gene reminds us that the main event is Bret Hart defending the title against Razor Ramon. The segment ends with Mean Gene reminding us not to get lost in the shuffle, call our local cable companies, and order the Royal Rumble today. We cut back to Sean Mooney, still outside the Manhattan Center, where a line has formed. Mooney tells us that these folks are all in line to buy tickets for next week's show. Just then, a man dressed as a Hasidic Jew comes pushing through towards the front of the line, saying that his nephew, Ron Bartlett, is inside. I'm Ron's nephew, Uncle Morty Feldman, he says, and that his nephew got the tickets for him on discount because he's a good bagel. The fake beard clearly shows that it's Bobby Heenan, and Heenan still insists he needs to get inside. Decides that he'll head to the roof to see if he can get in that way, and we go to a commercial. Back from break, we get instructions on how to order tickets for the next two tapings of Raw and get a double dose of the uncooked, uncut, and uncensored tagline because Bartlett and Savage talked over one another and Vincent says they do it again so they get it right. For those playing along at home, that's five times we've heard that damn triad. Vince then throws to footage from this past weekend's episode of Superstars, where we see the Ugandan giant Kamala being abused by his manager, Dr. Harvey Whippleman, and his handler, Kim Chi, following a match. The Reverend Slick runs down to the ring during all this to try and intervene, but he gets punched out by Kim Chi for his troubles. This triggers something in Kamala, though, and he turns face and lays out Kim Chi with a chop and chases Dr. Harvey Whippleman back to the locker room as the clip ends. It's now time for the main event. The Undertaker versus Damian Demento. Back to the live broadcast as Damian Demento is already standing in the ring, and we hear a funeral bell toll as The Undertaker gets ready to make his entrance. Bartlett says that it looks like Demento got his hair cut during a power surge. As The Undertaker makes his entrance, Vince thanks WFAN and Don Imus for allowing Rob Bartlett to appear on the show tonight. Yeah, I got a two-word phrase for them that ends with you, but the first word isn't thank, if you catch my drift. Referring to Paul Bearer holding the mystical Undertaker's urn, Rob Bartlett asks Vince, who's the guy with the martini shaker? Learn the product before you work with them, for God's sake, Bartlett. Demento and The Undertaker stare each other down as the match begins, and Demento punches The Undertaker square in the face, staggering him slightly, but really not doing much harm. Demento whips The Undertaker into the ropes, but The Undertaker slams Demento face first into the mats. Undertaker pretty much in complete control of this match, as Savage describes it as two big names, the World Wrestling Federation, going head-to-head. Randy, leave the bad jokes to Bartlett, huh? At no point was Damian Demento ever a big name. Here or anywhere else. Vince plugs next week's episode of Raw as Damian Demento gets some offense in, but it's very short-lived. Undertaker hits Demento with a flying clothesline, followed by a tombstone piledriver and the win. Vince tells us next week we'll see Mr. Perfect versus Papa Shango. El Matador will be in action, and Woody Allen versus Mia Farrow in a steel cage match as we go to another break. All these awful dated references. Usually I get a good laugh at dated references, but these are just... ugh. He's back from break, and Doink is jumping around and laughing, and Vince McMahon's going to try to conduct an interview with him. I guess this is the main event spot? An interview with Doink the Clown? Okay. Vince tells Doink that Crush had warned him about making kids cry, and Doink says that it's not his fault that the kids don't have a sense of humor. As long as he laughs, that's all that matters. Doink goes on to say that if Crush was out here right now, Crush would be the one crying while Doink laughs, and how convenient, here comes Crush. Crush points to Doink's one arm, which is in a sling, thanks to Crush, and tells Doink that that's a warning. And if Crush catches Doink messing with anyone else doing his stupid jokes that no one else finds funny, Doink might end up with his other arm and both legs in cast as well. Doink sprays Crush in the face with a small water pistol, and a chase ensues around the ring. Crush slides into the ring for some reason, and Doink falls to the ground outside laughing at him. Time as Sean Mooney tells Bobby Heenan that he can go inside the venue now. Of course, it doesn't really matter now that the show's over, but Heenan doesn't know that, nor does he seem to care. He's just glad that he's able to get inside the building, and the show fades to black. So there you have it, the very first episode of Monday Night Raw. Hard to believe it was 23 years ago. And here we are, 23 years later, Raw is still on Monday nights, still... coming to us live for the most part, except for the occasional show taped in England, where they tape it earlier in the day and then broadcast it at the usual time over here in the States. But I digress. It's still around. And even though it wasn't a really great show wrestling-wise, it was still kind of fun to go back and watch it. I could have done without Rob Bartlett, pretty much, but you take the good with the bad, I guess. And like I said, this was the first wrestling program broadcast live during the week, so it was definitely a game changer for the industry of professional wrestling. It would soon be followed up with WCW Monday Nitro, which would directly compete with it, and the WWF, now WWE, would expand to other shows during the week, such as SmackDown, which also still airs to this day. It started on UPN, remember that channel, and now I believe it's on USA now, along with, not entirely sure, things change so rapidly and I'm kind of out of the loop, but I think that's where it is now. I don't know what night it airs anymore either, because that's changed several times during its run, but I digress. So, yeah, this was the pilot episode of Wrestling with Hindsight. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. I really, really want feedback on this show, because that'll determine whether or not I decide to keep doing it. So please, any questions and comments and feedback, send it to me on Facebook in a Facebook message if you're my friend there, or email it to chrismcg1983@gmail.com. That's chrismcg1983@gmail.com. Please let me know if you liked the show, any suggestions you would give to improve the show, and if you want to hear more episodes of the show, because only with feedback from you, the listener, that will determine if I decide to keep on going with this. So, yeah, like I said, all questions, comments, and feedback can be sent to that email address. If you are on Twitter, follow me on there if you so wish. It is at DramaGuyCJM, that's DramaGuyCJM. Check out my Patreon page and consider becoming a patron for all my podcasts. That's patreon.com/DramaGuyCJM, patreon.com/DramaGuyCJM. By becoming a patron, you help support the future improvements for this podcast and all others. Currently looking to try and upgrade my membership on Podomatic, which is my hosting site, which will give me more storage capacity and more monthly bandwidth. For becoming a patron for as little as $1 per episode, like I said, that makes you a patron, and as a thank you, I always thank my patrons personally by name at the end of every episode of a podcast I do, and so we've reached that point, so thank you once again to my current patrons over on Patreon, Rachel Delecta and Eddie Landis. And as I'd said before, the patronage is a cumulative reward for you as well. If you accumulate donations up to a total of $5, for every $5 you contribute, that earns you what I dub as a credit to suggest something for an episode of the podcast This Is Gonna Suck. So if that's something you'd be interested in making me doing, you can become a patron and you know, determine, you know, what your amount will be and watch the reward and grow to that point. Or if you just want to make a, you know, single one-time donation, you can do that too via PayPal, the same address, chrismcg1983@gmail.com. Okay, that will do it for this episode. Thank you very much for listening to the pilot episode of Wrestling with Hindsight. Maybe it'll be back. We shall see. Next week, the return of Witty Banter with my guest, Chikara Senior Official, Bryce Remsburg. Figured I'd try to talk to him the week before the big Season 16 premiere for Chikara. So, thanks again for listening, and come back next week for me and Bryce Remsburg on Witty Banter. Thanks for listening.